Yeah, welcome in to the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keezer here with you. Joseph, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm multitasking as we start the show, because as you'll get to this point, probably, you know, school lunches.
Oh yes.
And then you get like these like balance low, so please put more money in. So one of my kids, I won't say which one, is minus $26 right now. Like, wait a minute, are you like getting like you $15 worth of food at
door dashing?
Yeah. God, actually, I wouldn't put that past him or her.
Yes.
This not person. Specifying. Yes.
Minus 26.
Yeah, minus 26, man. The other one is plus $9.90. Oh, okay. So what? How?
All right.
One of them, I don't know, really.
I'm not going to assume.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, who knows? It could be.
Could be any of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. Nick Keezer. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Joe, so have one of the kids not had the personal finance class that's required at the high school level in Tennessee?
Is that required?
Yeah, it is, because when I graduated, you had to have it.
Really?
Well, yep. Well, one of them is in middle school, well, so that. No.
Oh, okay. Well, you said one of two there.
Well, so and one's been through high school, one's in high school, and two. So two of the three have taken the personal finance class, which is a great class.
Ah.
I mean, truly, like, some of the conversations we have, even about like credit card debt and stuff like that, it's like, I would have liked a personal finance class in high school.
Yeah, me too.
That would have been probably good for me. But, you know, I guess if you got to have like six burgers at lunch, you got to have six burgers at lunch, you know?
Look, when you have that metabolism at that age, knock yourself out, man.
Yeah.
Doesn't last forever.
Yes.
We got a lot to get into on the program here today. Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7 will be with us at 8 o'clock. Lots going on with the Vols right now, in whether it's the baseball team, basketball team adding people in the portal like they did yesterday, football team losing people in the portal like they did yesterday. We'll get into all that with Wes coming up at 8 o'clock. Take your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. You'll hear a conversation we had with Dane Brugler coming up later this hour at 6:30 as it relates to the Titans and the NFL draft as well. So not going to want to miss that coming up later this hour. We begin with the Nashville Predators. Their regular season comes to an end last night. They fall 4-2 at the hands of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, Joe, it was a game that went basically how I expected it would go. I said this before the game and was tweeting about it. I thought it was going to be virtually impossible for the Predators to match the intensity / desperation / whatever word you want to throw in there of the Pittsburgh Penguins last night. I mean, you can try to manufacture everything you want, but I mean, there's just a difference between a team that is playing for their life and in their season, and a team that's trying to clinch a wild card spot. I mean, just there's a natural difference there that's really difficult to overcome. And Pittsburgh, they came out guns blazing. They looked great in the first period. I think they outshot them 20-5 in the first period. They scored two goals, had two more taken off the board for goaltender interference. I actually thought after that, the Predators did a great job in the second period of coming back out and kind of responding to that. And then in the third period, it was back and forth, and Pittsburgh skates away with a win. So a missed opportunity originally last night for the Predators to clinch the first wild card spot, losing in regulation to Pittsburgh. And then John Hines and those pesky Minnesota Wild.
Ryan Hartman.
Took down the LA Kings last night in regulation. So it's a weird thing, because that was not on like the NHL's official clinching scenario yesterday, because LA's technically in front of Vegas. But now with that result, LA has one more game. They're at 97 points. The max they could get is 99. That would tie them with the Predators, and the Predators hold the tiebreaker. So the worst that the Predators are going to finish is the wild card one spot. They will be wild card ones, and it's going to either be because Vegas drops one of these next two here and they finish back of LA, or it's going to be because Vegas comes all the way up, passes LA, and LA drops back to wild card two. So wild card one is officially locked in for the Predators, and the opponent, not official yet, but likelihood is it's going to be Vancouver.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting night. I didn't anticipate the Wild going in there and getting that done.
I did not either.
And you know, I'm with you on the Preds. You know, that first period, it was a total ambush. You know, and like you said, you said it before the game. It's going to be tough to match this. I did think after that period, you know, it'd be better for them to not just get completely just run out of a building and then not play hockey for a week.
Agreed.
And apparently, you know, there's talk that like game one might not be till Tuesday in Vancouver.
I've heard that.
So you're talking about a long time of not playing a hockey game. I thought the second period was really important for the Preds because they really controlled the action in the second period. I thought that was an important response for them, just to sort of, you know, push back and hang in there. And then you get, to make it 3-1, you had the play where it looked like maybe Yossi got hurt, and you're like, geez, of all things right now, to get that guy hurt, apparently just – I didn't hear if anybody said anything after the game, but it looked like it just like got hit in the arm.
Stinger.
And he's fine. But that's one of those like, too, if it's like an elbow or something, you know. So I thought it was a good pushback from them. And then, but still, after the game, I'm like, well, they're going to be, Vegas is going to win their two games against Patsies at home, and the Preds are going to be going to Dallas. But all of a sudden, John Hines comes out of nowhere and gets it done.
Yeah, Johnny Hines coming in clutch for the Nashville Predators last night. You know, I with the way the first period went, I mean, they're outshot 20-5, but it was more about like the traffic in front of the net. I even tweeted, I was like, I might get UC Soros out of there after the first period because, I mean, he was taking a lot of contact. There was, you know, plays, there were collisions around the net, and I was like, the last thing they need right now is to get him, you know, hung between a post here and caught up and hurt. Obviously, they didn't do that. He got in some good work after that. Ultimately, that probably is best case scenario for the Predators is him sticking in there and getting out of there. But I was worried, like the way after that first period went, Pittsburgh clearly was making an effort to crash the net, and they got two goals taken off the board because of it. They were right around the net, and I was like, okay, let's get UC Saros out of here healthy. And then when Roman Yossi got hit with that shot, I was like, oh God, you got to be kidding me. I mean, he went down and he was struggling for about 30 seconds, and then.
Yeah.
I think they figured it out after that.
But. Yeah, yeah. So, turned out, you know, they get out of there.
I believe they're unscathed, I think.
Yeah. And look, now, if it is Tuesday, you know, look, it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be Vancouver, right?
Yeah.
It could be, I still technically could be Edmonton.
It could. Vancouver needs one more point to wrap up the division.
Yeah.
Now, the other part of that is... you know, Vancouver has not wrapped. I mean, Dallas has not wrapped up the first spot yet either. So, I mean, technically, there's a chance that Vancouver could win the first spot, and that Dallas would be the division winner, but wild card one matched up against them.
Yeah.
So, there's still some work to do there. Jeff Patterson, who covers the Canucks up there for a variety of different things, Ringside Vancouver, says. 2 points, clinch the Pacific, stay in hunt for the top spot in the West for Vancouver. 1 point clinches the Pacific, but Dallas is out of reach. 0 points would need a point in Winnipeg in game 82 to clinch the division, and the Oilers still alive for the division title. So basically, if Vancouver is going to catch Dallas, they got to win both of their remaining games and hope that Dallas drops them. If they get just 1 point.
Dallas has one game left, Vancouver has two.
Right. So if they get just 1 point. When they play Calgary, which I guess is tonight. I'll have to go look at the schedule. But if they get 1 point, they'll still clinch the division. But then that would kind of lock in the matchup. 1 point against Calgary, they're the Pacific Division champs, and they can't catch Dallas, and then you'll know that it's Vancouver.
So it's probably academic, but since there's a possibility, what about just the 8 days as opposed to 5 days before you play a hockey game? Because you know, there's probably a pretty decent chance that the Dallas series could start on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, it would be – first off, the Predators are off today. So I think we knew that was going to happen. I think regardless, if I'm Andrew Brunette, I would probably treat it this way. Off today, kind of a – I'm not going to say a light practice, but, you know, normal practice tomorrow. And then Thursdays would be ramped up pretty hard. Like I would be – not, I don't know if I would scrimmage, but I would do just about everything. Like battle drills, I'd be out there for a good while on Thursday. And I think if you do that, like if you, hopefully you'll know by then, and you'll know what your opponent and schedule looks like. But, I mean, that's the thing. That's what makes this so weird. The regular season doesn't end until Thursday.
I bet you they don't.
They may not know.
They don't put any. The league won't put anything out until probably after the game's Thursday.
That would be my guess.
Yeah.
Now, the teams may know before then.
Yeah.
But
it's just a
weird situation.
Yeah, it's just you'll get to – and that schedule you just said makes sense even if you're playing Saturday. And then
I agree.
Friday, you're – so then do that and then be like, okay – and now here's Friday and Saturday and Sunday and travel Monday.
That's a long time, man. You know, another scrimmage like thing on Saturday, right? Like, all right, here we go again.
Ramp it
round two.
Ramp it back up, yeah. Or Sunday, I guess. Yeah.
It's just a really, really weird situation. And then, like, how does that affect your goalie? The way that he's played. How does that affect? I mean, it's kind of the ultimate balance of rest versus rust. I mean, the one good thing is it's not like they're not practicing. So it's not the same as the kind of the bye week scenario that people have thrown out there of how bad they look coming off that.
Where everybody goes their separate ways.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be out there fishing. I mean, they're going to be practicing. So that's the one thing I guess you feel good about, but there is a difference between practice. No matter how much you try to simulate it, there's a difference between practice and actual game action, particularly playoff game action. It's hard to simulate that.
Exactly. And just, again, like particularly in this sport, you know, in this sport in football, right? Like you can't replicate what it is in the actual game with high stakes because you're not going to, like, do that stuff to your own teammates.
Exactly. Yeah. Hopefully not.
Wow.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Preds lose last night, but L.A. loses in regulation to Minnesota. And Preds are locked into the wild card one spot, likely taking on Vancouver in the first round of the playoffs. We'll take your reaction to that, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you on this Tuesday morning. Taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Jacob on the text line. I know y'all have discussed possible first-round opponents and who y'all would like or not like to get matched up with. From the outside looking in, how would you say other teams view the Predators as a potential first-round opponent?
I would say that both of these division winners would much rather play the Kings. Now, maybe not Vegas. But, I feel like people paying attention to the league, the Preds, again, they finished 25-3, you know, in their last 28 games. So, I think that there's – and you know, a lot of times you look at what elements of a team make them dangerous. I mean, yeah, you have a goalie like Saros – you start there and say that's a guy who can steal some games for you. So I would think that, look, if you're Vancouver or Dallas, you're not like shaking your boots at playing the Nashville Predators, but you have to be wary of what they've done to even get into this position.
Yeah, I think that from the team standpoint, definitely true. I could tell you the Vancouver fans very much looking forward to playing in Nashville, very much. Dallas fans want Nashville.
So they want
no part of Vegas. No part of Vegas, which I understand. And I mean, the LA part of it's weird because LA plays so differently. I mean, they basically just try to trap you to death. I think most people don't want LA just because they don't want to have to watch it. If that makes any sense, like it's like, oh, they're gonna try to just trap you all game long, and it could just be 2-1 out there all the time. So. I think there's Vancouver. I can tell you, a lot of fans have been in my mentions. They want Nashville.
They want.
I can tell you.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So you can use that however you want to.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes sense. I would be more afraid of the Preds than the Kings, but
I would too.
I mean, it's the playoffs. You know, it's you go to the NBA playoffs. Sometimes although I think this year in the West it may not be this, but, you know, some years it's like you're the one and you get the eight and it's just going to be a sweep and it's just a whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen in this tournament.
No.
Not much. I mean, it happens, but it's very rarely, you know, an absolute gimme and you know it's – and sometimes you think it is and, I mean, you know.
Very rarely does the 2022 Colorado versus Nashville series play out the way most people think it will.
Yeah, like, I mean that's total dominant. That series happens sometimes, but not much.
Exactly.
And that was a Nashville team without its goalie.
Yeah. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Bob in Antioch. Bob, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. I know whoever the Predators get in the first round is going to be a difficult match, and they'll be Preds will be the underdogs. But I've been reading the Vancouver Sun the last couple of weeks, and the Canucks are not trending upwards. They're having some problems in goal, and they're also having problems scoring, and so they're not trending upwards. So I think that's a good omen for the Predators. It reminds me of a couple of years ago when the Predators, I think it was the year they won the division, but they were still shaky kind of going into the playoffs. Yeah. So hopefully that'll happen here.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Bob. Appreciate it. I mean, that's 2019, I think he's referring to, when they won the division and then were out in six games against Dallas. And they didn't look great coming
which
down
was an upset.
Which was an upset. Like Vancouver, the interesting part about Vancouver, if that's what the matchup is, which that's likely what it's going to be, is Thatcher Demko, their goalie, has been out for about 6 weeks. Now, he's playing, I think, tonight. So he's going to get a couple of games in here before the playoffs. So what does he look like? Man, he's a great goalie. I mean, he's really, when he's on, he's really, really good. And he gives them a chance to steal some games, much like your goalie does. So if he's on, he's really, really good. He's been off for a while now. So how quickly can he get back up to speed? How much more difficult can the Predators make his life kind of early in that series to get to him a little bit, I think is a really important factor. But look, Vancouver, you know, they're going to be the underdog. The Predators are going to be underdog regardless of who they play. Vancouver is a winnable series for the Predators. It's a winnable series. That doesn't mean they're going to win it. But Vancouver is absolutely a winnable series for the Nashville Predators. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with Demko. I mean, you would assume that every precaution to make sure, you know, like if the playoffs would have started, you know, last week, he probably would have played, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like it times out pretty well for them to try to get him going. But still, just like with Saros every year. And I don't know with Demko, is he normally a slow starter in a season? I mean, Saros every year. Like, if Saros had this, you'd be concerned because he just needs a few weeks every season right? And this year, I guess he needed a couple months.
Yeah.
Although I think maybe that had something to do with maybe the system and things like that. You know,
a lot of other guys.
But still, I mean, he wasn't playing great for a couple months. Yeah. So. That's and I do think that's potentially something that gives the Preds a little bit more of an edge than they would have if nothing had ever happened to them.
Agreed. And Demko this year was 34-13-2 in 49 games, a .247 goals against, .917 save percentage. So he's pretty good numbers. I mean, he's pretty good goalie. Now, you know, one thing that is interesting when you start to look at some of these guys that are really important for Vancouver, like Quinn Hughes. I don't think he has any playoff experience. Brock Besser, you know, Elias Pettersson, like the playoff experience difference, especially in the main guys. Like, it's one thing that, you know, there are a couple outlier guys that have playoff experience, but in the main guys on Vancouver and the main guys on the Predators, it's pretty dramatic. Like, there's a big difference in terms of playoff experience. So sometimes that matters, sometimes it doesn't. Like, I mean, look, I've seen teams that have no playoff experience roll through the playoffs and get through Western Conference Final, Cup Final, and it doesn't matter. Yeah. So,
if you're good and you play good, you're good.
It's not the be-all, end-all, but I do think it matters some, right? Like, I mean, big situations, especially in the pressure cooker that is a Canadian market, like, I think there's a lot to like about it if you're the Predators in terms of kind of that experience difference. And then, you know, to Bob's point, Vancouver hasn't played great down the stretch. I mean, they've won some big games. They had a big win at Edmonton the other night. Edmonton didn't have McDavid, so that makes a pretty big difference. But you know, it's not like you look at Vancouver down the stretch and you're like, wow, like those guys have just been lighting the world on fire. Again, that may not matter come playoff time. A lot of things switch. I mean, we can go through countless examples, Joe, of teams in their last 10 games that are like 9-0-1 heading into the playoffs, and they're out in five games in the playoffs. Or you can go through an example where they're 9-0-1 and they just ride the wave and they go all the way to the Cup Final. Like, a really weird tournament that way to try to establish what means what heading into the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, the Preds were not playing well at the end of 17. And then you just start it over and you go get a couple shutouts in Chicago. And, you know, so, I mean, it is a clean slate. And Vancouver is very good. So they get their goalie back. They're a very good team. You know, they played at a high level for a lot of this season. And maybe that's exactly what they need, is just to, you know, start, get the playoffs started. And it's like a totally, you know, it's a fresh start. So, but they're still, yeah, to me, you know, it's still preferable to Dallas for the Preds, not for us, but for the Preds.
Yes. For us, my dream is dying.
Yeah. Well, it's not dead yet.
Not dead yet.
Not totally dead.
Maybe Western Conference final?
That's
probably be better anyway,
that's
right?
It'll have to be. Wouldn't that be fun?
Dallas versus Nashville. Matt Duchene versus Barry Trotz. In a matchup to get to the
line
cup final.
Those guys up, yeah.
Just line them up. It would be awesome. So Vancouver needs one more point to clinch the division. Still unlikely that they're going to catch Dallas. You know, like you said, Dallas has one more game. So who does Dallas play in their final
They've
game?
They've got St. Louis.
So
St. Louis at home.
And St. Louis is out of the playoffs. Dallas is much better than St. Louis anyway. So Dallas likely going to be the one overall in the Western Conference. Vancouver winning the Pacific Division would be the two, and that would match you up against the Vancouver Canucks. So it's
sometime
like
next
it's
week.
Vancouver. Yeah.
Maybe, I guess.
Sometime maybe next week and a five-hour plane ride later.
Yeah.
Have fun up there.
I don't totally understand the Tuesday thing. And I heard this, I think, listening to, I guess it was Hal talking to Jared yesterday.
Okay.
Was when I first heard it. But it's like, I mean, if the playoffs start Saturday,
yeah,
there's a game one on a Saturday. There's also going to be a game one on a Tuesday.
I got a hard time seeing that.
But
maybe.
But it seemed like that there was some reasoning with the building maybe or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Could be. I mean, it's.
I mean, look, if Def Leppard's coming through, you got to let them rock, yeah, man.
You got to move aside.
It's the rock of ages.
Let them rock. I think Tim McGraw's coming through here at some point, so there's not going to be any games on Tim McGraw night here at Bridgestone.
Well, why don't they, you know, kind of like build a Tim McGraw concert around a Preds game, and he can sing the goal song live?
Maybe on to something.
He can
there.
Be the intermission band.
Maybe on to something there. Coming up next, you'll hear a conversation we had with Dane Brugler from The Athletic, the draft guru for The Athletic. Got into a bunch of different topics and prospects with him. That's coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday morning. A week from Thursday, the first round of the NFL Draft. Finally, we've made it to this point. And to help us talk more about the NFL Draft, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Dane Brugler from The Athletic, who is kind enough to join us on our show every year around this time, the NFL Draft guru for The Athletic. Dane, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you guys?
We're awesome. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Dane, as you can imagine, obviously a lot of conversation here in Nashville about Joe Alt and the left tackle position. When you talk to people about Joe Alt, when you watch Joe Alt, how do you view him in terms of how he compares to the other left tackles in this draft? Is there a gap between him and everybody else in your mind? How do you view the Joe Alt part of this from your evaluation?
Yeah, you never use the word consensus because, honestly, it should never be – that word should never be used in any draft conversation because there's never a consensus on all these players. But I would say the overwhelming majority of evaluators believe Joe Alt is the top offensive lineman in this draft. And it's from a combination of what you like on film, but then also what you think his ceiling is and the fact that he's still growing and getting better. 6'8 and a half, 320 pounds. The height does work against him at times, but he can bend and he does get power from his lower body. And he has long arms. He has over 34 inch arms. And I think what you love most about Joe Alt is the fact that he grew up as an athlete. He didn't grow up playing offensive line his entire life. I mean, his dad was a Pro Bowler back in the early 90s for Joe Montana in Kansas City, protecting his blind side. But he grew up, Joe Alt grew up playing quarterback. He grew up playing tight end. It wasn't really until his senior year of high school that he became more of an offensive lineman. And then at Notre Dame, obviously, is where he really got better year after year after year. And even going back to the summer, when I was preparing for this upcoming draft and doing my early legwork, watching Joe Alt, I was, okay, this guy's clearly good, but, you know, I'm not quite on board with him yet as being a top half around one guy. But then throughout this year, he made so many key improvements. And so that's the big thing with Joe Alt. Yes, he's good right now, but it's the year-over-year improvement that he continues to make and the ceiling that you think he's going to reach that gets you so excited.
I want to stick with Joe Alt, Dane. So on one hand, I want to ask, how would you compare him? So he's the top offensive lineman in this draft, maybe to some of the other top like left tackles in recent drafts. Is there any drop-offs from, you know, some of those guys that come to mind? But then also, if, let's say, the Titans weren't able to get him, you know, the Chargers take him at five or whatever, other tackles in this draft, are any of them in your mind worthy of the number seven pick?
Yeah, and I think, obviously, you look at some of the tackles that have come out recently, and Joe Alt has a lot of what they offer. I think some of them are a little bit maybe older, more experienced, more in terms of their schooling of offensive line play, a little bit more advanced. Just, they've been doing it longer. But I think with Alt, you know, you look at he has a lot of the ingredients that you're looking for at the position. Again, he has the athleticism. His three-cone and short shuttle at the combine were outstanding. You look at the size, and he has the length that you want. He has big hands. And then the year-over-year improvement, like I mentioned, I think that's key for him. So, you know, if you were going to compare him to, say, like an Andrew Thomas coming out of Georgia, the Giants took top five, or, you know, some of these recent offensive linemen, I mean, he's right there up in that conversation. And so I think it becomes interesting. Jake Matthews, when he's coming out of Texas A&M, I think that's a really good comparison, even though they have different body types. I think there's some similarities there. And obviously, Jake Matthews has been a really good player for a long time down in Atlanta. And to that point, that's why he could be off the board in the first six picks. So if he is gone, then, okay, what's plan B? Is it one of these other offensive linemen? I am a fan of Olufoshinu from Penn State. I think when you look at what he has done the last 2 years, 6'6", 315 pounds, good athlete. His ability to sink his weight is really impressive. The body control is outstanding. He is not as well-versed as a run blocker as some of these other guys in this draft, but in pass protection, that's what you are really hanging your hat on with Olufoshinu. So, you know, he has had a really good last 2 years. He's still just 21 years old. He's a young player, still growing, really smart, characters off the charts. So, you know, I think with this offensive line class, it's kind of pick your strength. What are you looking for? If you want maybe the strongest player in the draft, J.C. Latham from Alabama could be your guy. If you're looking for versatility up front, then Troy Fautanu from Washington, that might be who you look at as that second best offensive lineman. So I think it's an offensive line rich class and at the top in terms of the first round, top 25. We're going to see a lot of these guys fly off the board. It just comes down to what do you really prioritize in terms of what you're looking for, what are you looking to address? And so that might determine ultimately what direction the Titans go.
Dane Brugler with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Dane, you know, I watched Brock Bowers play in college and just am wowed every time I watch him play. What stands out to you about when you watch him on tape? Would that be a crazy option for the Titans at number seven overall? How do you view Bowers and where he fits into this mold here?
And crazy, no. Risky, sure. Just because you look at the hit rate at the position and you know, drafting a tight end that early, especially when if he's drafted at number seven overall, he's going to enter the NFL as one of the highest paid tight ends in the league. So, you know, there is risk involved. But like you said, when you watch his tape, you just come away saying, okay, yeah, this guy is just so dynamic. He can be a playmaker. It really comes down, if you're a general manager, you have to have a lot of trust in your offensive play caller that he's going to understand how best to use a talent like this, because you can't draft Brock Bowers seventh overall and then just plug him in as an inline tight end and not really feature him like he should be featured. So with Brock Bowers, that's the key, is the versatility that he offers. You want to line him up as a slot receiver, he can do that no problem. You want to line him up outside, he could be an X receiver. I mean, he could be a Z. You can line him up in the backfield. You can line him up on the wing. Doing whatever you want to do with Brock Bowers is kind of the key to really opening up everything he can do and what that means to the entire offense, because the defense has to account for Brock Bowers on every single play. And when you're lining him up on the in the slot one play, but then in the backfield of the next, that changes what the defense is trying to do. And that can help an offensive play caller really mix and match and decide how best to attack that defense. So he's one of the best, 10 best players in the draft, no doubt about it. Will he be drafted in the top 10? That's a different story. I think if you get caught up with the T and the E, the tight end, just if you get caught up in that part of it, I can understand why you would be a little hesitant to draft Brock Bowers in the top 10. If you focus strictly on what the tape says, what the traits say, the different ways he can affect your offense and affect the scoreboard, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you know what? We know how to best use him. We know how to best implement all this talent that he can bring to us. I mean, Jets, how many tight ends do you see take jet sweeps and go and make a play? So, I think it wouldn't be crazy, but it would be risky to draft him there at number 7.
And, of course, one of the guys who may take one of those top 10 spots, and we see this so often, is a quarterback. And J.J. McCarthy seems to be the most discussed guy lately, Dane. And as you wrote in The Beast, his evaluation, quote, his evaluation feels incomplete, which I think is a good way to put it. I mean, I've always thought he had really high-level talent. He obviously wasn't asked to do the same things that other quarterbacks and other offenses have done. They won a national title doing what they did. What do you think of him? I guess, has your evaluation of him, what you were able to glean after going through all this information, changed from like when you started, and where do you think he goes?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I felt very alone on the J.J. McCarthy island in the summer, because he was back to my August top 50. He was a top 20 player for me, and I'm very optimistic about what he would be this season. And I mean, I still am. It's just a lot of people have passed me with their optimism for J.J. McCarthy. I still feel like he is a guy that's going to be an NFL starter somewhere in the mid first round. That's where I feel comfortable drafting him. But it sure feels like he's going to go somewhere in the top 5 to 7 picks. And I understand there's a quarterback tax. Rarely do you draft the quarterback where ideally you grade him. You have to get him a little bit earlier. So that's part of this conversation. But yeah, with J.J. McCarthy, there's some things about his game that you wanted to see more of. And so it's a bigger projection than for most quarterbacks. And that's takes a little bit of faith. And I can understand why some teams are going to be like, no, we'll let somebody else, take that risk. Other teams are looking at their quarterback options, say the Vikings sitting there at 11, they make the trade. So they're in position now with 2 first round picks to go get a quarterback. If they can't get up to 3 with the Patriots to get one of those top 3 quarterbacks, their next best option as they see it is, okay, we need to go get J.J. McCarthy. And that's assuming J.J. McCarthy doesn't go 2 or 3, which you can't completely rule out at this point, because again, no consensus. Every team looks at these guys very, very differently. But let's say Jaden Daniels goes 2, Drake May goes 3 to the Patriots. If you're the Vikings, you can't, and you need a quarterback and you don't want to wait another year, you can't sit back and say, oh, well, JJ, we'll take JJ at 11. No, you got to go get him. And whether that's the Giants at 6 or another team like the Broncos or Raiders looking to trade up to get him. So, yeah, and I know fans they'll roll their eyes when you talk about quarterback win-loss record, but teams care about it. And therefore, it's relevant to the conversation. And with J.J. McCarthy, 36-2 with a state championship in high school, 27-1 with a national championship in college. And to your point, a lot of it was done with the ground game, with the way they built the trenches. But when they needed to play third down, fourth down, he made it consistently, especially late in games. So there's a lot about the tools and the talent with J.J. McCarthy that gives you plenty of optimism moving forward.
Talking to Dane Brueger from The Athletic, writes The Beast, the ultimate draft guide out there. It's amazing stuff. Hopefully Dane gets a nap soon here. but last thing for you, Dane, just the receiver group. Obviously, it's the top 3 have sort of been compared against each other, but I mean, you can go pretty far into this. And I know you have like second round grades on like a Keon Coleman, a Roman Wilson, but how good is this class maybe compared to recent classes, and how many difference makers beyond those top 3 do you see here?
It is a really good group. And honestly, I'm convinced that the rest of our lives, wide receiver is going to be strong every year, because that's where all the athletes are going. And if they can't play quarterback, they're going to receiver. And that's today's modern day NFL. that's who really scores the points and affects the scoreboard. So, yeah, you look at it at the top with the top three, and that, again, no consensus. Some teams look at it a little bit differently with Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze in terms of the order. Most have the same top three, but the order does shift a little bit from team to team based off of, you know, what they're looking for and what fits their offense. But after that, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU, Adonai Mitchell from Texas, Ladd McConkey from Georgia, all these receivers, they're just all a little bit different. So it depends on what, if you're looking for that true X, you know, Brian Thomas is going to be someone that you really target. If you're looking for more of a inside-outside presence, Ladd McConkey from Georgia makes a lot of sense. Ricky Pearsall from Florida. If you're looking for a pure ball winner down the field, Keon Coleman from Florida State. So all these receivers are lumped into the same position, but they're all so very different, XYZ, that the strengths that they bring. So I think it's important that we differentiate these receivers and this, and what they do best on the football field, because every team's looking for something a little bit different as they try to fill out that receiver depth chart. So, yeah, this is another strong group. You don't have to get your guy early to get your receiver, like you're alluding to, third round, fourth round, fifth round. There's going to be wide receivers with talent. But we're also going to see these guys fly off the board. It won't be surprising at all if we see 13, 14, maybe 15 receivers off the board in the first two rounds.
Well, Dane, obviously you're a really busy man. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning. And we've almost made it, my friend. The draft right around the corner.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
Absolutely. Dane Brugler from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row, the guru of the NFL draft for The Athletic. Appreciate him taking time to be with us. We'll react to what Dane had to say coming up next. Take your thoughts as well, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Tune in to 1025-1063, The Game. Today is Vanderbilt baseball takes on Lipscomb. Pre-game beginning at 545, first pitch at 6 o'clock. Vanderbilt baseball brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, your countertop experts. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Appreciate Dane Brugler's perspective on the Titans and the NFL draft. Joe, I thought a couple really interesting points that he brought up there. The Brock Bowers part of this is interesting from the standpoint of, and he talked about it. I mean, he's definitely a top 10 player in the draft. Whether or not he goes top 10 is a different story. And you brought this up too, the tight end hit rate, especially tight ends that are drafted high and are drafted in the first round, a lot of those guys either don't work out or certainly don't live up to kind of the billing of where they're drafted. So how does that factor into things here? If you did draft Bowers, how would you use him? I thought his breakdown of kind of the best way to highlight his skills was interesting, because he can line up in a bunch of different spots. And as you brought up, like, he's not your traditional tight end in terms of the size that he brings to the table. Like, he's not Rob Gronkowski out there. He's 6'3", he's like 245, which is not overly big for a tight end. So it's a different way you'd have to use him. You could line him up in the slot. You can put him on the outside. Georgia put him in the backfield at times too. So he's versatile in what he brings to the table. But what did you make of, number one, I guess the range that Bowers could go, given the fact that he is a top 10 prospect by most people's consensus, and number two, the way you'd have to use him if you were the Titans or anybody else that drafted him?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Dane talking about him kind of reminded me again of what I actually saw when he played football, which is, my gosh, this guy is ridiculous. But let me quickly go through the tight ends drafted in the first round in this century. Kyle Pitts, as we all know, hasn't been, you know, number four overall, hasn't been, you know. T.J. Hockenson, good. Noah Fant, Hayden Hurst. I remember O.J. Howard, man. I thought he was going to be something else. Evan Engram, David Njoku. Oh, Detroit Lions, Eric Ebron. Yep. Oh, my goodness. Tyler Eifert, Jermaine Gresham, Brandon Pettigrew, another Lions special. Dustin Keller, Greg Olson, very good. Vernon Davis, Mercedes Lewis, Heath Miller.
Yep.
Young Kellen Winslow, I swear it's not that much longer. Ben Watson, Dallas Clark, Jeremy Shockey, Daniel Graham, Jeremy Stevens, Todd Heap, Bubba Franks to your Packers, and Anthony Becht.
So some of those guys,
have been good. Very good, for sure. But, like, that's the thing. I get now, a lot of these guys also are like Todd Heap, number 31. Bubba, you know, Shockey 14, Dallas Clark 24, you know, like Heath Miller 30,
yep.
Olsen 31. That's where you feel a little bit better drafting a tight end. Now Eric Ebron, number 10, baby, Detroit Lions football. You know, Hockenson was 8. My goodness. And he's a good player, but is he number 8 good? No, he's not. Kyle Pitts so far has not been number 4 good.
No.
Is Brock Bowers going to be number 7 good or top 10 good? Yeah. He is, again, as Brugger kind of laid out there, he's different. He's not just a tight end. So, yeah, it's a really interesting thing. Like, think of the shock if the Titans, like, took him with Joe Alt sitting there, you know?
It just doesn't even feel realistic. But I know. The reason it doesn't feel realistic is because we're all paying attention to mock drafts and draft analysts right now. Like, the Titans board could be completely different than some of these people have.
They might be laughing at the idea that they wouldn't take him at number 7. Right. Of course, he'll easily be number 1 on their big board if it goes, you know, the way it's the mock draft's projected to go.
Yes. Yeah.
So, it's interesting. I do feel like he's one of those players who could go higher than the middle of the first round, even though that's where most people have him. It still does seem to me like a luxury pick that, like, if you do that, first of all, he better be incredible.
Yep.
And second of all, like, again, you still have this huge issue of trying to protect this quarterback, and now what are you going to do to solve that?
What did you make of Brugler's evaluation of Alt and kind of how he compares to not just this class, but some of the top left tackles and tackles in general that have gone off the board the last few drafts here?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, he's not – I mean, look, if you are viewed as, you know, that elite, elite left tackle prospect, usually you go in the top 3, right? I mean, sometimes you're a candidate to be the number 1 pick, so – again, he brought out the Jake Matthews comparison. I know that doesn't get people excited, because I think he's really good, and if you had a really good left tackle that you could plug in there for a long period of time, to me, I mean, I know it's not exciting. You want someone that's just, you know, blots out the sun and goes to the Pro Bowl every year, but it's not a bad outcome. When it comes down to it, when you just think about how many total misses there are going to be in this first round, the total misses that there are every year in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're drafting him at number 7, like, you want him to be just a totally dominant, all-pro, you know, like Joe Thomas type player, right? Like, that's what you want.
Yeah, right.
Now, is that realistic? Is that maybe hoping for – it's not hoping for too much. Is that expecting too much out of somebody like that? I mean, I don't know. I mean, Joe Alt, if you said right now he was Jake Matthews and he was your starter at left tackle for the next 10 years, I mean, I think there are some people that would view that as, well, okay, couldn't he be a little bit better than Jake Matthews? But again, Jake Matthews is pretty good, and you're talking about being there for 8 to 10 years. And not really having to worry about left tackle. I mean, it's not like Jake Matthews never gets beaten, and you know, he's not the best left tackle in the game or anything like that, but pretty solid player and has been there for a while.
Well, and the question I would have, so listening to PK yesterday on with Big Joe, and he was talking about Taylor Lewan, and how if you broke it down to traits and athleticism and talent, Taylor Lewan, you can make the case for him as the best left tackle the Titans have had. But he's not, because he was hurt and he missed time and things like that, right? So he probably slots 3rd in the Titans era at left tackle. And so if you tell me, like you know, Joe Alt, like, he's not as athletic as Taylor Lewan, for example, right? If you want to compare those two players. But if you tell me that he's going to be available and play all year, you know, that to me, there's so much value in that. If you knew that you would get Jake Matthews' career and Joe Alt, I personally say sign up right now for it, because, yes, it could be better, but it could be so much worse. And there's such a big range of possibility of worse than that in this draft, in any draft.
We'll take more of your thoughts on what Dane Brugler had to say, more of your thoughts on Joe Alt and his availability. What should the Titans do at number 7 overall? A lot of your thoughts already on the text line. We'll get to those. 615-737-1025, our phone number. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.